voted last meeting of calendar year 2014. Let's stand for a moment of silence. Thank you. Tonight, we're honored to have Troop 67 to come and lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance. Troop 67, please come.
States of America, and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, Troop. Appreciate it. Continue your service. Madam Clerk, please call the roll.
Mr. Ball?
Here.
Mr. Bullock?
Here.
Ms. Fardier?
Here.
Ms. Diller?
Here.
Mr. Hollins?
Here.
Ms. Kilpatrick?
Here.
Mr. Powers?
Here.
Mr. Retta? Mr. Sheldon?
Here.
Mr. Smiley?
Here.
Mr. Street?
Here.
Mr. Tackett?
Here.
Mr. Weiner?
Here.
Mr. President, the roll call vote is 12 present, 1 absent.
Thank you, Madam Clerk. We may have approval of minutes. Are there any corrections or amendments to the minutes of the November 25th, 2014 meeting?
Motion to approve is distributed.
Second.
All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Ayes have it. The minutes are hereby approved. Any announcements from members of council at this time? Any announcements? Seeing none, we have introduction of ordinances. Madam Clerk, please proceed with the introduction of ordinances.
Ordinance 14132, revised zoning map, Mill Creek Hundred, west side of Greenbank Road, north of Purwood Highway, State Route 2, and south of Orsini Lane. 0.33 acres from NC 65, 6.5 neighborhood conservation to CN commercial neighborhood, and 0.21 acres from CR commercial regional to CN, and to amend the 2012 comprehensive plan consistent therewith. Ordinance 14133, revised zoning map, Upquinning 100, south side of Knoxontown Road, west side of Harris Road, and west of State Route 1 and U.S. 13. 2.19 acres from SR Suburban Reserve to I Industrial, and to amend the 2012 comprehensive plan consistent therewith. Ordinance 14134, revised previously approved Minkwedell Starbucks preliminary plan and rezoning for Dollar Tree Hessler Boulevard, Newcastle 100, north side Hessler Boulevard, west side North Dupont Highway, U.S. 13. Ordinance 14135, to amend Newcastle County Code Chapter 14, Finance and Taxation, Article 1 in general, regarding monthly financial reports.
In these ordinances will be voted on at the next meeting on January 13th. Unless they are referred to a board or a commission, whereby they will be voted on at a later date. I will now have reports from select and special committees, beginning with the Finance Committee, Councilmember Cartier.
Thank you, Mr. President. The Finance Committee commenced convened its meeting at 1:30 today in the 8th floor. At the approval of the minutes, we had a presentation on the 2014 Comprehensive Annual Financial Review of the county's finances by our independent external auditors, which are contracted by the county auditor. They found no major discrepancies or failings in our controls and management of county funds. Under resolutions, we had two purchase order resolutions, one for the Wilmington Institute Library, the other one for the North Wilmington Branch Library on Market Street, North Market Street. We also had another resolution detailing the next solicitation of capital bonds by Newcastle County, and it's hoped that we are going to be able to refinance and realize major savings on the interest payments of the county's financial interest payments on our debt. And there's also $85 million in new capital bond bonding going forward. $60 million of that is going into sewer rehab, another $20 million into county parks. We also have a resolution that we discussed by the Claymont Fire Company, which is a conduit bond for $650,000. The fire company assumes all the responsibility for that, They're buying a new pump truck and a pump truck ambulance combination. We are looking at, the council approves a ordinance, excuse me, another resolution brought forward by Councilman Spahni would allow council members to increase the micro or small grant from $150 to $2,500. And you know, the detail of that, allow Councilman Spahni to discuss when it comes to that resolution. Under ordinances, we have an ordinance that will basically clarify our leash law and off-leash law standards, so to take into account the parks that we have throughout New Castle County. Under council grant requests, several grant requests were approved. Questmore Swim Club and other grants, including the MOE Robotics Competition Grant for the robotics nonprofit that engages students throughout New Castle County. We also had a discussion on, and we passed a measure to approve the splitting of funding for a new projector upgrade for the council chamber, which we share with city council, and we'll be splitting that cost with them. We also had under other the announcement of retirement of some of our upcoming retirements from our senior financial managers in the county and the finance department, and their resolutions congratulating on their service on the consent calendar tonight. And then the meeting adjourned, and we ended the committee meeting.
Thank you, Councilman McCarty. Councilman Smiley, you have anything to add?
No, sir.
Thank you so much. We're joined by Councilman Moretta for the record. The public safety.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Held our public safety committee meeting this afternoon on the 8th floor, and we reviewed over three ordinances that will be brought forward before council tonight for a their consideration and adoption. One dealing with drug control unit overtime, the next dealing with extensive flooding issues that occur in the Bayview Beach area, and is being addressed through a cooperative program with our state and federal government, Delaware Emergency Management, and our own emergency management to address raising the homes that in that area that are really below the flood level staging. We also spoke about community oriented policing service officers being hired under the COPS program. And I think if there was any one point that was made this afternoon by Chief Setting, was that not only do we need to continue to fill, attempt to fill the vacancies, but over the next few years, we need to increase the numbers in our county police department if we're going to be able to continue to meet the demand for emergency services by our citizens and do it as well as we're doing it today. In concert with that, our 911 Emergency Communications Center will have to have adjustments in personnel to also meet that demand. Councilman Co-Chairman Street, as he did last meeting, once again not only mentioned but reported on the spirit of cooperation with Director Bryant and Chief Setting, other members of council, with pulling together citizen advisory groups. And today, Co-Chairman Street mentioned not only for the elder folks, but for our younger generation to be able to better understand law enforcement and what goes on and how we can work together hand in hand and prevent some of the tragedies that are occurring. And finally, we did report that to date, there's been 107 law enforcement officers that have lost their lives in the line of duty this year throughout the United States of America. And very sad to report that, but it's a fact of the type of society that we're living in today. So very productive meeting, a lot of good reports, a lot of good interaction, and I am very hopeful and will continue to support as a co-chair of public safety the initiatives that co-chairman Street has asked us to pursue, and he's right on target with it.
Thank you, Mr. Bell. Mr. Street, you'd like to add anything as co-chair of public safety?
Yes, well done, co-chair. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Land use, Councilmember Retta.
Thank you. On Tuesday upstairs, it was Tuesday on December 2nd in council chambers upstairs, we had two items that were discussed and they will be brought up tonight. One had to do with Old Baltimore Road, which is a lot to be divided into three, and to amend the chapter for the UDC, which is Councilman Hollins has, and it has to do with the workforce housing, or affordable housing.
Thank you, Mr. Retta. Mr. Tapio, then we'll head as co-chair.
No, well done.
Thank you, Mr. Tackett. Special Services, Mr. Shelby.
Yes, Mr. Sheriff, Mr. President, thank you. On December 2nd, Tuesday at 1:30, we had an update on the parks legislation that was passed the week before. We also reviewed the permit revenue growth, the new fees that will be coming up for the years 2014 and 15, and we got a heads up in the entire state of Delaware, but especially Newcastle County, of a beetle that's called the Emerald Ash Borer that attacks ash trees that was actually introduced in the United States and Michigan in 2013 and should be here, unfortunately, in the next 18 months, so we were given a heads up that how they attack the ash trees, and we do not know what to do, but it gives us a case to go out to the public and tell them that we might have troubles with this in the near future.
Thank you, Mr. Sheldon. Thank all of the chairs and co-chairs for your outstanding reports. And moving on to the consent calendar, any member of the council or the public may remove an item from the consent calendar for further discussion by simple request. An item is not removed, it will be subject to amendment discussion, or other objection will be voted upon as a package. Consent calendar items are noted on the agendas as such, and they are available in the back of this room and as well as online. Is there anyone from council or the public who wishes to have an item removed at this time? So the man, is there a motion to approve the consent calendar?
So moved.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
The ayes have it. Madam Clerk, please proceed with the reading of the consent calendar.
Resolution 14233, congratulating Nathaniel Constantine Rule for achieving the rank of Eagle Scout. Resolution 14234, congratulating the Office of Finance for earning the Distinguished Budget Presentation Award for Newcastle County's Comprehensive Annual Budget Summary for 25 years. Resolution 14235, congratulating Edward M. Milowicki for over 37 years of service and retirement as an employee of Newcastle County Government. Resolution 14236, congratulating Michael M. Makowitz for over 36 years of service and retirement as an employee of Newcastle County Government. Resolution 14237, recognizing Kenneth C. Lindsay for 50 years of dedicated active service to the Wilmington Manor Fire Company. Resolution 14238, congratulating Dorothy Holler for celebrating her 100th birthday on December 26, 2014.
Madam Clerk, please call the roll on the consent calendar.
Mr. Bell?
Yes.
Mr. Bullock?
Yes.
Mr. Cartier?
Yes.
Mr. Dillon?
Yes.
Mr. Hollins?
Yes.
Mr. Kilpatrick?
Yes.
Mr. Powers?
Yes.
Mr. Retta?
Yes.
Mr. Shelton?
Yes.
Mr. Smiley?
Yes.
Mr. Street?
Yes.
Mr. Tackett?
Yes.
Mr. Weiner?
Yes.
Mr. President, the roll call reveals 13 yes.
Consent calendar has been passed. Mr. Weiner?
Thank you, Mr. President. I'd like to make a motion to suspend the rules in order to present an item J, resolution 14-245.
Is there a second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Ayes have it, Mr. Weiner.
Yes, I ask that resolution 14-245 be read by title only and placed before council for its consideration and adoption.
Second.
Resolution 14-245, congratulating Christopher L. Durbin for achieving the rank of Eagle Scout.
Mr. Weiner.
Yes, as per title, I'm going to invite the scout up afterwards to say a few words.
Council, have any comments or questions? Any public comment? Senator, Madam Clerk.
Mr. Bell?
Yes.
Mr. Bullock?
Yes.
Mr. Cartier?
Yes.
Mrs. Dillard?
Yes.
Mr. Hollins?
Yes.
Ms. Kilpatrick?
Yes.
Mr. Powers?
Yes.
Mr. Retta?
Yes.
Mr. Sheldon?
Yes.
Mr. Smiley?
Yes.
Mr. Street?
Yes.
Mr. Tackett?
Yes.
Mr. Weiner? Mr. President?
Yes.
I'm sorry. Mr. President, the roll call reveals 13 yes.
R-14-245 is approved. Mr. Weiner.
Yes, Mr. President. May I approach and invite also the members of Troop 67 as well as our honoree new Eagle Scout, Christopher L. Dirk.
Please approach.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Scoutmaster was
you, Mr. Weiler. Congratulations and honor to give him another big hand for that great achievement. I need a motion to return back to the regular agenda.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Ayes have it. Presentations. Is there a presentation by any councilman? Any presentations tonight? Agenda item H, consideration of resolutions removed from the consent column and other resolutions. R14-239. Mr. Cartier.
Thank you, Mr. President. I'd like resolution 14-239 read by title only and placed before council for its consideration.
Resolution 14-239 authorizing the execution of one purchase order contract increase in the amount of $353,894 for the Wilmington Institute Library Main Branch for funding library operations for the Department of Community Services, which revises the total purchase order amount to $1,002,699.67.
Mr. Cartier?
Yes, thank you. This purchase order contract reflects our continuing payment on the our operations at the Wilmington Institute Library, and per title, which is the library that is on Rodney Square, very fine neoclassical building, which has undergone a lot of restoration. In the midst of discussion of this resolution, we were notified that the board of this library is making a continual progress on diversity, which we are all concerned with our public dollars funding so much of the of the operation of this library. So I'll close remarks and let the will of council speak.
Thank you, Mr. Cartier. Council, you have any comments or questions? Public comment. Seeing none, Madam Clerk, please call.
Mr. Bell?
Yes.
Mr. Bullock?
Yes.
Mr. Cartier?
Yes.
Ms. Diller?
Yes.
Mr. Hollins?
Yes.
Ms. Kilpatrick?
Yes.
Mr. Powers?
Yes.
Mr. Retta?
Yes.
Mr. Sheldon?
Yes.
Mr. Smiley?
Yes.
Mr. Street?
Yes.
Mr. Tackett?
Yes.
Mr. Weiner?
Yes.
Mr. President, the roll call, Bill 13, yes.
R14-239 is approved. R14-240, Mr. Cartier.
Thank you, Mr. President. Like resolution 14-240, read by title only and placed before council for its consideration.
Resolution 14-240, authorizing the execution of one purchase order contract increase in the amount of $94,376 for the Wilmington Institute Library North Wilmington branch for funding library operations for the Department of Community Services, which revises the total purchase order amount to $267,396.67.
Mr. Cartier.
Thank you. This, again, is another purchase order contract to increase funding in the continuing operation of the North Wilmington Branch Library, which is on North Market Street in Wilmington, and per title. And we all know that our libraries are a much valued and important service that we perform for the citizens of the county and the city, and we look forward to maintaining that level of service and excellence.
Thank you, Mr. Cartier. Council, any comments or questions? Any public comment? Madam Clerk, please call the roll.
Mr. Bell?
Yes.
Mr. Bullock?
Yes.
Mr. Cartier?
Yes.
Ms. Diller?
Yes.
Mr. Hollins?
Yes.
Ms. Kilpatrick?
Yes.
Mr. Powers?
Yes.
Mr. Retta?
Yes.
Mr. Sheldon?
Yes.
Mr. Smiley?
Yes.
Mr. Street?
Yes.
Mr. Tackett?
Yes.
Mr. Weiner?
Yes.
Mr. President, the roll call reveals 13, yes.
R14-240 is approved. R14-241. Mr. Cartier.
Thank you, Mr. President. Like resolution 14-241, read by title only and placed before council for its consideration.
Resolution 14-241, a resolution prescribing the details in form and providing for the sale of general obligation bonds of Newcastle County.
Mr. Cartier.
This resolution provides for $85 million in a new bonding for public improvements in the county. $60 million will go to sewer rehab. The other $25 million will go to several of our parks for improvements. And then there's another component of this resolution that proposes to find the refinancing opportunities with our existing bond debt to realize overall interest savings on the bond debt. And with that, I'd just like to request, I guess our general manager of finance is here, just to give us a little detail on that portion of the resolution or someone from the finance department, because it is a little bit of, you know, an interesting scenario that could realize, you know, some significant savings on the interest payment on our existing bond debt.
Mr. Cook, please come, sir.
Mike Coop, Chief Financial Officer. Yes, the refunding is, as we all know, interest rates are still low, and Newcastle County has an opportunity to refinance possibly up to $122 million of our bonds. We could also, it could also be $100 million. Every day is a different day in the bond market. We are planning on going in January. We're hoping to, obviously, we'll be lowering our interest rates. We could have a savings of the county from on the low end. It could be around $4 million, as our financial advisor was saying today. On the high end, it could be up to $9 million. This will all be determined when we finally go to the market. And we'll be playing it, you know, day by day, waiting for the rate to be right based on our financial advisors.
Council, you have any comments or questions for Mr. Coop, Mr. Cartier?
Yeah, just a final comment before other members of council may have questions. We're able to do this because we enjoy, we're one of roughly 40 counties in the United States with a AAA bond rating, so we can pursue the lowest possible interest rates in municipal bond market. It was reported that, you know, in the current bond rates, we're looking at about 3.5% to fund this new bonding and to refinance. So we'll see how that plays out as we go into the, you know, to the, you know, months ahead here when they go forward with that.
And yes, to that, yes, Newcastle County is very fortunate to be able to enjoy the benefits of a AAA rating.
Anything else, Mr. Coop?
That's it, sir.
Thank you. Council, any comments or questions? Public comment? Seeing none, Madam Clerk, please call.
Mr. Bell?
Yes.
Mr. Bullock?
Yes.
Mr. Cartier?
Yes.
Mr. Diller?
Yes.
Mr. Hollins?
Yes.
Ms. Kilpatrick?
Yes.
Mr. Powers?
Yes.
Mr. Retta?
Yes.
Mr. Shelton?
Yes.
Mr. Smiley?
Yes.
Mr. Street? Mr. Tackett?
Yes.
Mr. Weiner?
Yes.
Mr. President, the roll call reveals 12 yes, 1 absent.
R14-241 is approved. R14-242, Mr. Cartier?
Thank you, Mr. President. I'd like resolution 14-242 read by title only and placed before council for its consideration.
Second. Resolution 14-242, resolution approving issuance of certain bonds or notes by the Claymont Fire Company, Incorporated.
Mr. Cartier.
Yes, thank you. This is a well-understood mechanism by County Council where our volunteer fire service that we operate as the fire response and EMS service in the county under our contractual arrangement, that they can use our AAA bond rating and go solicit conduit bonds to finance capital improvements to their operation. And this particular resolution is about the Claymont Fire Company, which is in fact in my district. I know the president of Claymont Fire Company has a tendency to give us more detail, but just in substance, it's a $650,000 conduit bonding that will go to purchase new fire equipment. And if the president of Claymont Fire Company would like to provide further comments, he's more than welcome to come up and do that. He's...
Council, you have any comments or questions?
He seems very satisfied back there.
Mr. President, no comments. No public comment. Thank you.
And one last comment I'd like to make. The Claymont Fire Company has been in existence now 85 years of great service to the Claymont and Greater Brandywine Hunter community, and they do nearly 6,000 EMS runs. They bear a huge responsibility and do a great service protecting the citizens of Claymont and Greater Brandywine Hunter.
And I might add, the food is excellent.
You can't miss. We're going to the shrimp feast. Absolutely.
Madam Clerk, please call the roll.
Mr. Bell?
Yes.
Mr. Bullock?
Yes.
Mr. Carter?
Yes.
Diller?
Yes.
Mr. Hollins?
Yes.
Ms. Kilpatrick?
Yes.
Mr. Powers? Mr. Retta?
Yes.
Mr. Shelton?
Yes.
Mr. Smiley?
Yes.
Mr. Street?
Yes.
Mr. Tackett?
Yes.
Mr. Weiner?
Yes.
Mr. President, roll call reveals 13. Yes.
R14-242 is approved. R14-243, Mr. Weiner.
Yes, I ask that 14-243 be read by title only and placed before council for its consideration and adoption.
Resolution 14-243 to amend deed restrictions for 5 Old Barley Mill Road, Christiana 100, Newcastle County, tax parcel number 07027000020, to permit a subdivision into 3 lots.
Councilman.
Thank you, Mr. President, and members of council. This is a matter which we discussed in land use. This is a resolution to amend deed restrictions because Newcastle County is a party to this, as well as the immediate neighbors, and thus permit a subdivision of one parcel into 3 lots. As we know, the Boydens now own the parcel, and they'd like to split it in, at 5 Old Barley Mill Road, and it consists of 18-plus acres, and break it into 3 separate individual parcels. The declaration of restrictions making the county a party of record to this is dated November 21st, 1986, and we had benefited from a presentation from legal counsel at our last meeting, but if any of the council members would like a presentation again, both the applicant and his attorney are here today.
Council, any further discussion or comments or questions on public comment? Seeing none, Madam Clerk, please call.
Mr. Bell?
Yes.
Mr. Bullock?
Yes.
Mr. Cartier?
Yes.
Mr. Wheeler?
Yes.
Mr. Hollins?
Yes.
Ms. Kilpatrick?
Yes.
Mr. Powers?
Yes.
Mr. Retta?
Yes.
Mr. Shelton?
Yes.
Mr. Smiley?
Yes.
Mr. Street?
Yes.
Mr. Tackett?
Yes.
Mr. Weiner?
Yes.
Mr. President, the roll call reveals 13. Yes.
R14-243 is approved. R14-244, Mr. Smiley?
Yes, Mr. President, I request that R14-244 be read by title only and placed before council for its consideration.
Resolution 14-244 to amend the rules of Newcastle County Council to increase the amount of permitted time-sensitive allocations to individual appropriated grant accounts without majority approval at a formal meeting while retaining public notice procedures.
Mr. Smiley.
Yes, Mr. President. In short, what this does is it raises the amount at which a council member can provide a grant upon receiving a grant application without the approval of council. It does not increase the county council budget and it does not increase the amount of anyone's grant account, but it does provide for greater service to the community in those situations where the application may be filled during a gap in council meetings and there be a time constraint that needs to be filled.
Thank you, Mr. Smiley. Council, you have any comments or questions? Mr. Street?
I'd like to thank Councilman Smiley for his initiative on this.
Anything else? Council, public comment? Seeing none, Madam Clerk, please call.
Mr. Bell?
Yes.
Mr. Bullock?
Yes.
Mr. Cartier?
Yes.
Ms. Diller?
Yes.
Mr. Collins?
Yes.
Ms. Kilpatrick?
Yes.
Mr. Powers?
Yes.
Mr. Retta?
Yes.
Mr. Shelton?
Yes.
Mr. Smiley?
Yes.
Mr. Street?
Yes.
Mr. Tackett?
Yes.
Mr. Weiner?
Yes.
President, the roll call reveals 13. Yes.
R14-244 is approved. We'll move on now to ordinances substitute number 1 to ordinance 14-128. Ms. Kilpatrick.
Thank you. I would like substitute 1 to ordinance 14-128 read by title only and placed before council for its consideration and adoption.
Substitute number 1 to ordinance 14-128 to amend Newcastle County Code Chapters 4, Animals, and 24, Parks and Recreation pertaining to dogs off-leash.
Ms. Kilpatrick.
Thank you. We had a discussion in council committee meeting today regarding this. This came to me after a complaint and a court hearing, and the comments that came over to me is that a judge had said that there was something that was within the law that he had no discretion over, and it seemed to be some discrepancy between the county law and the state law. So I took this to our counsel, asked if she would look at it. I know that she took it to the law department, had them look at it, and this is language that clarifies leash laws within our park and also includes the ability for horse riding within our parks at the discretion of the Department of Special Services.
Thank you, Councilwoman. Council, you have any comments or questions? Any public comment? Seeing none, Madam Clerk, please call.
Mr. Bell?
Yes.
Mr. Bullock?
Yes.
Mr. Cartier?
Yes.
Ms. Diller?
Yes.
Mr. Holland?
Yes.
Ms. Kilpatrick?
Yes.
Mr. Powers?
Yes.
Mr. Retta?
Yes.
Mr. Shelton?
Yes.
Mr. Smiley?
Yes.
Mr. Street?
Yes.
Mr. Tackett?
Yes.
Mr. Weiner?
Yes.
Mr. President, roll call number 13, yes.
Substitute number 1 to Ordinance 14-128 is approved. Ordinance 14-129, Mr. Street.
Yes, Mr. President, I move that Ordinance number 14-129 be read by title only and placed before Council for its consideration and adoption.
Second. Ordinance 14-129, amend the grants budget to appropriate $37,055.16 in emergency illegal drug enforcement EIDE funds from the State of Delaware Department of Public Safety to the Newcastle County Department of Public Safety EIDE FY 2015 Drug Control Unit Overtime Grant.
Yes, Mr. President, this was discussed in the committee meeting this afternoon. Reiterated earlier in the committee report per title.
Thank you, sir. Comments or questions from council? Any public comment? Seeing none, Madam Clerk, please call.
Mr. Bell?
Yes.
Mr. Bullock?
Yes.
Mr. Cartier?
Yes.
Mr. Miller?
Yes.
Mr. Hollins?
Yes.
Ms. Kilpatrick?
Yes.
Mr. Powers?
Yes.
Mr. Retta?
Yes.
Mr. Shelton?
Yes.
Mr. Smiley?
Yes.
Mr. Streets?
Yes.
Mr. Tackett?
Yes.
Mr. Weiner?
Yes.
Mr. President, roll call bill 13, yes.
Ordinance 14-129 is approved. Ordinance 14-130, Mr. Bell.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move that Ordinance 14-130 be read by title only and placed before Council for its consideration and adoption.
Ordinance 14-130, amend the grants budget to appropriate federal grant award of $649,443 from U.S. Department of Homeland Security through the Delaware Emergency Management Agency, DEMA, under the Department of Safety and Homeland Security, state funding of $179,426 from the Delaware Department of Natural Resources and Environmental Control, and private funding of $37,053 to the Bayview Beach Elevation Project grant totaling $865,922.
Councilman.
As per title, Mr. President.
Comments or questions from council? Public comment? Seeing none, Madam Clerk, please call.
Mr. Bell?
Yes.
Mr. Bullock?
Yes.
Mr. Cartier?
Yes.
Mr. Miller?
Yes.
Mr. Hollins?
Yes.
Ms. Kilpatrick?
Yes.
Mr. Powers?
Yes.
Mr. Retta?
Yes.
Mr. Shelton?
Yes.
Mr. Smiley?
Yes.
Mr. Street?
Yes.
Mr. Tackett?
Yes.
Mr. Weiner?
Yes.
Mr. President, the roll call is 13, yes.
Ordinance 14-130 is approved. Ordinance 14-131, Mr. Street.
Yes, Mr. President, I move that ordinance number 14-131 be read by title only and placed before council for its consideration and adoption.
Second.
Ordinance 14-131, amend the FY 2015 approved operating budget revised the Department of Public Safety to partially fund five police officer positions through the 2014 U.S. Department of Justice Office of Community-Oriented Policing Services COPS hiring program.
Councilman.
Yes, Mr. President, again, this was discussed earlier in committee today. We had a short presentation from Chief Settings. Co-Chairman Bell reiterated that discussion in his report, and in my view, we need these officers very badly, and one of the things the Chief said is that as soon as we get these officers hired and get finished this next class, we need another class. And if you read the news reports on crime, as I do every day, I think those reports and what our police department is fighting speaks for itself, and the need for the officers speaks for itself.
Thank you, Councilman. Comments or questions from council? Public comment? Senator, Madam Clerk, please. please call.
Mr. Bell?
Yes.
Mr. Bullock?
Yes.
Mr. Cartier?
Yes.
Ms. Diller?
Yes.
Mr. Hollins?
Yes.
Ms. Kopaczek?
Yes.
Mr. Powers?
Yes.
Mr. Weta?
Yes.
Mr. Sheldon?
Yes.
Mr. Smiley?
Yes.
Mr. Street?
Yes.
Mr. Tackett?
Yes.
Mr. Weiner?
Yes.
Mr. President, the roll call reveals 13. Yes.
Ordinance 14-131 is approved. Ordinance 14-109, Mr. Hollins.
Thank you, Mr. President. I am presenting ordinance number 14-109 as the primary sponsor. I want to recognize publicly the co-sponsors as President Bullock, Council Members Weiner, Cartier, Diller. And on behalf of all of the co-sponsors, I move that ordinance number 14-109 be read by title only and placed before Council for its consideration and adoption.
Second.
Substitute number 2 to Ordinance 14-109 to amend Chapter 40 of the Newcastle County Code, also known as Unified Development Code, or UDC, Article 7, Transfer of Development Rights and Other Incentives and Bonuses regarding the creation of a traditional neighborhood housing program.
Mr. Hollins.
Thank you, Mr. President. On October 21st of this year, we were presented with an analysis of the county's current market conditions with recommendations to provide much-needed, moderately-priced housing opportunities for residents of Newcastle County. Ordinance 14-109 is a derivative of that analysis by our Land Use Department. On last week, we had a very long, extensive meeting of land use to discuss the ordinance. Tonight, you will hear the elements of the substitute number 2 from the land use attorney. I will not give the same type of presentation I did on last week. I will save my colleagues the burden of having to hear me give another sermon tonight. But I do want to recognize those agencies that are supporting the legislation, and they include the Office of State Planning Coordination, Department of State Division of Human Relations, Diamond State Community Land Trust, the Arc of Delaware, the Homeless Planning Council of Delaware, the Homes for Life Foundation, Delaware Housing Coalition, the League of Women Voters, AARP Delaware, Housing Opportunities of Northern Delaware, and Habitat for Humanity. All of those agencies have supported this legislation through writing and verbally, and I have presented to a number of these agencies along with the General Manager of Land Use and the Land Use Attorney. So without any further ado from me, Mr. President, I'm going to ask the General Manager of Land Use if she can come forward and make the presentation to the County Council members and to the public.
Thank you, Councilman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I will be very brief also. I will just make some general summary comments for those of you who were not with us last week.
Excuse me, General Manager. Please state your name for the record.
I am Florida Land Use General Manager.
Thank you. Proceed.
As the council is aware, the county engaged both national and regional inclusionary housing and economic consultants, and the approach that has been brought forward to you this evening is one to require that moderately priced dwelling units be incorporated only in rezonings. Rezonings, by their very nature, a developer has already determined that the demand is strong enough for the increased zoning. What we do know is that many of our rezonings may be as much as 500% increase. There are also many that come in at 150 to 200% increase. What the performance has shown us is that once you go above a 70% increase in density, 20% of the units can profitably be moderately priced dwelling units. Nationally, over the past 20 years, the very vast majority of the programs have either been mandatory or transitioned to mandatory. Most of the programs are not limited just to rezonings. They're focused across the board. From the county's perspective, the county has a very outstanding housing approach. We receive over $21 million annually from the federal government. We have Section 8. We have families with 50% below AMI that receive that funding. Where the unneed met is with working families. Families who are 35 to 40 years old, renters, owners, and the general income bracket of $49,000 to $70,000. So this is the focus of this ordinance. Council is very aware of the existing workforce housing ordinance where the price point has been 120% of AMI. That has competed with the market. As a result, we've seen only 4 owner-occupied units, 72 units occupied in total. We've also seen a variety of circumstances where there has been backdoor leverage, where developers have come forward for rezonings rather than the density bonus with the community support, and we've seen a lack of qualified applicants. The new moderately priced dwelling unit ordinance before you tonight only will be applied to rezonings of 25 or more dwelling units. Based on the comments received, the modifications include if you have less than a 70% increase in density, there will only be a 10% set aside. If you have a 70% to 100% increase in density, there will be a 15% set aside. And when you go over 100% increase in density, you'll have a 20% set aside. There's also a modification based on comments for the affordability period to go from 15 years to 10 years. The target will be 50% of the target will be at 90% or below, which is lower than the prior existing ordinance, and 50% will be at 75% or lower of average median income. There is a voluntary option with a 20% density bonus. There are also opportunities for in-lieu fees and off-site units. We have been required by our comprehensive plan, the Fair Housing Act, and the certification that the county executive signs to undertake fair housing. As the Councilman Hollins has suggested, we received very strong support from the Housing Relations Commission, State Planning. I think more importantly is that as a caring community, we now have the opportunity to extend our compassion and inclusion to working people. Mary Jacobson will make a few comments on the legal issues. Thank you.
Thank you.
Council President Bullock, members of council, my name is Mary Jacobson, attorney for the Department of Land Use. I think we had a really productive session at Land Use Committee and addressed the details of the legislation that really needed to be hashed out. This, as the clerk to council read, is substitute number 2. After the planning board, we received a lot of comments and suggestions to the legislation. We were able to meet with interested parties that provided comments. They came in and talked to us, and that generated a substitute number 1 that we discussed at Land Use Committee. At Land Use Committee, there were additional issues that were raised, and we were able to address those with substitute number 2. So I wanted to hit on the issues that substitute number 2 is different than substitute number 1. I provided in the back a packet of highlighted ordinances if any member of the public would like to grab those, and I sent those to council last Thursday so they could see what the highlighted differences are. The first issue I believe was raised by Councilman Sheldon was where would we go if we were going from non-residential rezoning commercial office and we were going to a residential, where how would we calculate the base density? So we talked about that, and what was determined was to use S zoning district as the base density for any shift other than residential. And we found that would be a middle ground. So we talked about starting at 0 and thought that'd be better to take an approach where we would start at S. So there would be, some recognition of the land other than just the commercials. Another provision that we added was we saw a loophole at the last minute where we realized that there is an opportunity, and should I stop, Carol? There is an opportunity in the Unified Development Code where you can apply for a density variance, and in order to kind of cut the legs off that approach where they would avoid applicants would avoid a rezoning and an MPD requirement by going for a density variance,
we added a provision where if you were seeking a density increase through a variance application on a land development plan that contained 25 units or more, then you would also be required to provide MPDUs in the same percentages as you would be provided as if that was a rezoning plan. Based on numerous concerns, we added a provision allowing conversion from homeownership to rental if the homeownership unit was on the market for 365 days and there was a failure to get an offer on the house from a qualified purchaser. Again, it has to be, I think that is somewhat of a compromise because we took rentals out from the original, and now we're putting rentals back in with the caveat that it has to be marketed for sale for 365 days. And again, as General Manager Fulvin mentioned, we changed affordability period from 15 to 10 years. And that was to address numerous concerns that people had that it was too long. Again, I think the housing groups weren't thrilled about that, but I think in the spirit of compromise, everybody's okay with that. So with that, that's the changes from 1 to 2, and if you have any questions, I'll certainly address those.
Council, you have any questions or comments for administration?
Mr. President.
Councilmember Bell.
Thank you. I don't know whether it will be specifically to Mary, it possibly will be to the land use manager, but as we all know, workforce housing was created back in 2008, okay, 6 years ago. It was designed to help more low and moderate income residents buy homes, but produced only two such units in 6 years. By the time the moratorium went in effect, only 31 homes had been built, 29 of them rental units. The program was supposed to have generated about $550,000 for the county's housing trust fund. By the time the moratorium was enacted, county officials said at that time, instead, a mere $272 was generated for the fund. Comes from the News Journal. And I have continually brought up from the 12th District, I have brought up about infrastructure. And even when we've had folks from HUD in our committee meetings, and I asked about affordable housing, and I asked specifically about infrastructure. We have not, in the past, had a any type of a designation of areas where greater density should go. Instead, what we've done is we allowed for several developments, such as High Hook, Spring Oaks, Goldsboro Farm, Preserve at Robinson Farm, all on two-lane rural roads. No sidewalks, no shoulders, swales, no lighting, no playgrounds, no walkable, bikeable type of smart growth that I have learned to listen to since I've come on council. We have not accomplished that with workforce housing. Instead, we've allowed developments with greater density, some 846 homes increased in these projects due to the former workforce housing bonuses or the current workforce housing bonuses. So my question is simply this. How does the new legislation address the developments that are currently being built very slowly, and how are they held to the standard of the workforce housing to make sure that they comply with what they agreed with, what they got their bonuses for? How is that going to be done in future years? Because some of these projects may take several years to build out. Are we committed to do that? And the other thing is, where in this new legislation does it address anything about affordable housing and infrastructure? We have folks that could work in some of the areas of Middletown, but if they don't have their own transportation, there is no bus transportation. In many cases, it's 2 and 3 miles away to walk, with no sidewalks, with no street lights. We have failed miserably, and I voted. I admit I voted for workforce housing when it originally came up. It was sold to us by the current administration at that time. It was sold to us by land use, and we thought that that might be the right way to go and to turn around and create affordable housing. I think we look back today, it failed miserably. And here we are introducing a new ordinance in a time where there's more housing available than ever, more affordable housing available than ever, and yet we still are not addressing infrastructure to support affordable housing. So, twofold. How do we continue, because in some cases we're not doing it now, but how do we continue to monitor and hold these developments feet to the fire to build under the current workforce housing ordinance, because that goes away. That's taken out of the code. So who's going to monitor it 4, 5, 6 years, 8 years from now? And the other thing is, how have we dealt with infrastructure when it comes to providing affordable housing and trying to get folks into homes?
I'm going to address a couple of those points, and then hopefully Eileen can come in and fill in the blanks. It concerns me a little bit when I see that we're trying to tie the provision of affordable housing to issues such as transportation. There is litigation in Sussex County where Sussex County Council denied a land use plan, an affordable land use plan, providing affordable housing, partly on the basis of it wasn't near a bus line, where there wasn't transportation. They were subject to a federal action fined over $700,000 for I think that kind of thought process. So we have to be careful when we say that we have to have transportation infrastructure and busing available for areas where you're providing affordable housing. So I just want to put that on the record that you really can't treat these types of developments as differently than you treat any other type of development or make any assumptions that we need public transportation for these types of developments. Public transportation is a great thing. I think it's important, and we need to look at that issue, but I think that's a separate issue that shouldn't necessarily be tied to the adoption of this ordinance. The second thing, the current plans. The current plans are vested. The ones that are currently being built are vested. I think 10 out of the 6 that have been adopted under the current litigation, under the 2008 litigation, are being constructed. Those plans will continue to be constructed under the litigation under which they were approved. There's nothing we can do about that. That's the law in Delaware. That's vesting law. They are monitored regularly and inspected regularly by community services. And that was something that was put in place by this administration. I don't believe it was done in previous administrations, but this administration came in and put a very keen eye on that. And in fact, that is what generated moratoriums and really the time we spent on this new legislation. So we have a process in place, we have personnel in place to monitor those plans. The requirements of those plans are contained on a record plan. They're contained on recorded documents, the workforce master agreements. They're contained in deed restrictions. So there are legal documents that exist that will control the development of those communities. There are 4 plans that have not begun construction, 3 or 4. Those plans could possibly sunset. If they sunset, then they can come back in under this. They will not be allowed to continue because their plans will have sunset. So we have, I think, 93 workforce units on the books that could possibly go away if those plans sunset. So, of course, sunsetting is controlled. You have to begin construction. My understanding is at least 3 of the 4 haven't begun construction. The other one, I'm not sure if they have or not. The last issue you raised, Manners Committee, when we were talking about the moratorium, this was, I think, back in November when we were first adopting it, I was at the microphone in a very hot land use committee room, and I said $250,000 or $100 or $100,000, but whatever I said came out as $250,000. I did the same thing at the planning board the other week where I was like $500,000, so it was a matter of me tripping over the word $250,000. The number at the time of the moratorium was $250,000. That's how much we had in the housing trust fund. Today, A year later, that number has doubled because of projects such as Bayberry, where units are coming on board. We're roughly at $550,000. So that was my responsibility, and I apologize for that misstatement in the record. Do you want to add anything to this?
I'd like to have the question answered about infrastructure. And I don't buy it for 1 minute. And I'm adamant about this, and I'm adamant because this council's reputation, I think, is very important. And folks look to us. And when they bring matters through the years to us, and they say that maybe you tried to do good, okay, but it failed. You're darn right I'm going to ask the questions again before I vote on anything, because for our land use attorney to compare what happened in Sussex County to here, and I sit in the meetings, committee meetings, and one of the first questions that developers are asked is about walkable, bikeable, transportation, transit friendly, okay? And I'm hearing that we really shouldn't even be asking that question, and we shouldn't be looking when we're trying to create affordable housing, that we should not be worried about infrastructure. These folks that are moving in these developments have no shopping. In many cases, do not have traffic lights, no service stations. Fire protection is further away than it should be. And yet we've given them density bonuses and allowed these developments to be built totally out of the central core. So I think my questions are very legitimate and concerning to the fact that if we're sincere about providing affordable housing to folks to get them started, get them into a home, I dare say that infrastructure is critically important. And I also question why we shouldn't be asking that. We have to be careful now that we ask whether something's transit-oriented or user-friendly. I'm concerned about that.
Thank you, Mr. Bell.
Thank you very much, Councilman. Good comments and thoughtful comments, as always. One of the reasons that the recommendation to the county and the recommendation that we're bringing forward to the council is to limit this to only rezonings, is because with rezonings, we, the council, the community, we get to evaluate each and every rezoning. We should be evaluating each one of them for their access, for the livability, for the context. One of the things that I think this council has done an amazing job in the period of time, year and a half since I've been with you, is that as we bring projects forward, we have together been saying to applicants, do you have some services people can walk to? Are you going to incorporate those services? I know at every single hearing, there's an issue brought up of what are you going to do about bikes? What are you going to do about transit? The transit situation is very challenged within the state and within the county. These were part of the reason that rather than recommending that we do a broad-based, moderately priced dwelling unit ordinance, it is limited to rezonings because that is the opportunity for, first, if there are impacts, to identify the impacts, address the impacts, have the community identify the issues, and also to continue to do what this council has done an incredible job of, and that is really making sure that the new communities have amenities, and by amenities that includes goods and services, access. The second part of your question, I believe, was what about the affordable housing? The county's existing programs address the affordable housing. This program, again, is focused on working families. And not only we have the rezonings where there'll be the opportunity for all of you to discuss and debate and determine what's appropriate and what what infrastructure and what services you expect with these increases in density. Secondly, through the planning process, and we have the Route 40 corridor in Councilman Tackett's district is now underway, and that will look at the broader issues tying together all the things you're addressing. Route 141 is now underway, which will certainly be a very intense evaluation, and it's focused on transportation access. And Pike Creek is just beginning. So we as a county are trying to systematically, right now we have three. Next year we'll be looking at other corridors. So I hope that addresses some of your concerns.
Mr. President, if I could ask just one further question, and I'll yield to the rest of the council, and I apologize, but this is a very important ordinance, not only for affordable housing, but I think to our constituents that we're doing the responsible thing. Many folks think that this is being rushed through, and I guess my question is, as a follow-up, I attended the planning board meeting, and I saw where the land use department recommends this particular ordinance, but what about the planning board? On ordinance 14109, is our planning board recommending 109?
The planning board, and I believe it was a 5-3? A 4-3, 5-3-1 vote. Thank you. Good memories. Recommended that the ordinance go back to them for further discussion.
Okay. And that will not be done if this passes tonight?
It will not go back in this form if it passes tonight. There certainly will be ongoing discussions. I, for example, am meeting with the planning board next week to discuss a whole range of issues in the business meeting where people can also, can make public comments, but where it's open to the public, and this would be the kind of issue that we would be meeting on an ongoing basis.
And I just make my point on that, and like I say, myself and Councilwoman Kilpatrick were in attendance that evening, but we do get the documentation. And when I look at what the planning board said, which is not county employees, and they are an invaluable service to this county as a checks and balance and to make, look through things in a different vision and come back with recommendations. When I see their comments asking about what's the urgency, what's the rush, did the comparisons with some of the counties that they compared us to, are they realistic as far as Newcastle County? Concerned that the public didn't have adequate time or adequate addressing of the thing. So, I mean, there were fundamental questions, there were things that they commented in here, and so that concerns me because I value our planning board, and when I see that type of a vote, but yet we're still proceeding, what is the rush? And, we pass it tonight. And basically what we're sending back is a message that the rush was accomplished, and basically what you're looking at is, even though you're a advisory board and everything, that your vote, your comments, some of the things that you'd like to have further discussion on, and even public discussion, is not afforded to them. So that's concerning.
Thank you, Councilman.
Mary Jacobson, Office of Law. If I could address this issue of whether it appears as though we're rushing this. That original moratorium was adopted, introduced in November, over a year ago. When moratoriums are reviewed by courts, generally we have a lot of latitude to institute moratoriums, but where the courts really start looking at moratoriums with more of a skeptical eye is when they exceed about a year. We're beyond a year from the date of its introduction and close to a year from the date of its adoption. So to address the issue about timelines, yeah, we don't really want to pursue any more moratoriums because it gets to a point where the courts don't appreciate moratoriums much longer. As far as the process,
there is a process dictated by the Unified Development Code for adoption of text units. That process was followed. Concerns about notice, we went above and beyond what we did typically with text amendments. We had focus group meetings prior to planning board. We hired consultants to discuss this. There were meetings held with other departments about this. So whether that perception is accurate, I question. But we're at a point now where we've, talked to many, if not most, of the interest groups. We've received a lot of comments. We tried to incorporate those comments in what we feel is a very good and workable compromise. So I don't think there's a justified reason to say that it's been rushed. We've followed the code, and actually we went beyond the code by having focus groups, meetings that were in addition to what's required by the code.
I'm only quoting what several members of our planning board said, that they felt that they did not have ample time to really review and look through this, and they felt that they were rushed. So, I mean, I can only say what I'm reading and what I rely on. But like I say, I yield to
thank you, Mr. Bell. Thank you
very much.
Councilmember Powers and Councilmember Kilpatrick. Councilmember Street.
Sat here in committee and watched if it's on Limestone Road and somebody got into an accident 3 miles away, it's a problem. But when the accident is right at that intersection, it's not a problem because it's in Bells and Miners. It is a problem. And I don't want any more units built on a road that has no transportation. And I know it's not, you don't have to, right now, I've got other questions, so you might as well wait. people are getting in accidents on that intersection. We're building townhouses. The other question you may need to figure it out is how many more units of workforce housing are right out there right now that have to be built. As he said, right now, we got Amazon, the jobs for workforce housing. People every day trying to get to the bus stop that's 2 miles away from where some of these places are. As you said, looks like there's been 250,000 more generated out of the 6 and 12 district through the Housing Trust Fund. I'm getting into density. Councilman Bellin, it goes north. We're not getting anything preserved with TDRs or anything. With the state law, how the TDRs are. You can't transfer them out of the district. They have to be in a planning district or separate canal. So any density you build extra, we don't preserve nothing because you just gave it away. But I can't support this. But I do have one more. Most of this, and if you look at the number, the Councilman Bell's in my district, it's not affecting most of it. Janet will have some. Councilman Smiley, Councilman Patrick, majority of the council, the Grand 100, they have to build something, tear something down to build this. So.
Thank you, Councilman. Mr. Jacobson, I can respond, please.
Thank you, Council President Miller. I want to clarify something I said to Councilman Bell, and also in response to Councilman Powers' comment. In no way did I mean to say that transportation was not important. It is important to every single plan that comes before County Council. The point I was trying to make is you really can't tie transportation, traffic issues specifically to plans that provide affordable units. So that's the only point I'm saying. Transportation is a very important issue, and it should be looked at with every single plan. The one thing that we benefited from sitting down with different groups and also with the different planning board and even managed committee meetings that we've had is I think we had an opportunity to hear a lot of the concerns. There were many suggestions made for modification to the UDC. I sat down with you for several hours the other day just talking about TDRs and whether we cannot work a TDR project or program into this. And talked to Councilperson Kilpatrick about, you know, we really need more density. Transportation issues come up. I think these are all very important issues and issues that will be a focus of the department in upcoming text amendments and other reviews and determinations of what to do with the code. And I think it was great to be able to focus on this. This is not a piece of legislation that can fix all these issues tonight. It's not a piece of legislation that's intended to. So I appreciate it. I think we've gathered those comments and we'll review those comments. To answer a specific question, how many units are there now with workforce? There are 341 recorded workforce housing units. 248 of those workforce units are vested, so they are on plans that are actively being constructed. 93 of those lots are on plans that have not yet begun construction and could possibly sunset. So a definitive answer today is how many units are on the books for workforce housing that are going to get built? 248. And another 93 can come in if those plans don't sunset.
Councilman, follow up.
Well, I can tell you this. Looking at the six plants that are vested,
I'm calling back the bigger plants. I know the six are a lot smaller, but
right.
The bigger ones are Councilman Bell's line.
Well, there are Apoquin. We also have Red Clay, and we have Christina. It's not all Apoquin area, but there's Red Clay and Christina too.
Thank you, Council. Anything else, Council? Councilmember Kilpatrick.
Thank you. Over the past week, I've tried to make sense out of some of the things that I've heard in the discussions in committee and discussions that I had with the general manager of the Department of Land Use and Mary Jacobson. And sometimes I think I'm getting there, and other times I don't. This is all about density, no matter what anybody wants to say. You can't build affordable housing without having density. This is where the problem in the UDC is. It took away 8 zoning categories for residential, took us down to 2, so we don't have the ability within the UDC to build affordable houses. So they put overlays on these. They put an over 55 overlay, which gave us like 30%. Extra density. They looked at hamlets and villages, which would give us more density, had workforce housing, which gave us 100% density. These are all just band-aids to a bad piece of zoning legislation. And until we fix that, every overlay in the world is not going to make a difference. It's going to just be an overlay hanging out there, something that's all on its own. I looked at Montgomery County, because we talk about Montgomery County a lot, and they have an MPDU program and a workforce housing program. They take the MPDU program, and those houses sell for about $170,000. That's pretty much at the percentage of AMI that we are with this new program. Then their workforce housing seems to be a step up. That's 120% of the AMI, which is where we were pretty much with the old program, and their price point is $275,000 on those. So it looks like we've taken their MPDU program, but the price point of their workforce housing program. But along with that, in order for them to build these, they get tax incentives, land trusts, creative public-private partnerships, relaxed zoning standards, relief from impact fees, and all of this to just incentivize the builders to build within that area. So bonuses go along with all of this. It's not just the detriment of the buyer. There's bonuses that are given to these developers. If they can't build at the price point that they need to, and they want to put brick, for instance, on the front of one of their MPDUs, they get money from the county in order to do that. They get an incentive bonus in order to do that. I look at the 10-year now equity, and I look at what's available within this county. Sunday's paper alone had 35 houses listed for sale in their real estate section that were between, that were around under $275,000. When I look at the Zillow site, which is a real estate site, and I pull up unincorporated Newcastle County, I see over 1,400 homes that are for sale between $50,000 and $275,000. The price point that we're looking at, there's probably over a dozen new communities that are being built that are building homes under $275,000, and that goes from Darley Green in the Claymont area down to Townsend. I guess I'm not understanding what we're really trying to do here other than just have a program for program's sake. I don't see how we are helping the residents in this market that want the $275,000 or lower priced homes. I've said this before, I'll say it again. I have a daughter who fits this scenario perfectly. Four people, two children, two adults. Both the adults are healthcare workers. Their income at this point is in the $75,000 range. They just bought a $272,000 price house in Pike Creek Valley. If I were going to give her advice to say, yes, buy that one, or no, go under this program because you're going to get a new house, I've taken away her ability to her making her decisions that are best for her family if I put her in a house that controls their equity.
Thank you, Councilwoman. Councilmember Street.
Yes, thank you, Mr. President. On the one hand, I guess technically I don't have a dog in this fight. Reflect back on the library report. One of the things that the library report said, that the median income in my district outside the city was $48,000. Based on targeting folks who make $70,000 or more, folks in my district are not going to benefit, nor will they be disenfranchised. I quite frankly have pondered since at least September 23rd as to what I should or shouldn't do with this issue tonight. And I had concern about what folks would think about my position. But one, this is a major, major public policy. And as a councilman, I have no business sitting on the sidelines. And number two, if I can't do what I do every day and worry about what people think, that's not my modus operandi. I have to function off what I think is right. From the beginning, this was brought forward as a fairness issue and, by inference and innuendo, civil rights issue. I had questions and concerns about it then, but I looked at it at the time. Let's see if it works. And quite frankly, I sit here today guilty somewhat of going along to get along. But right now, it's clear that the initial so-called workforce housing program is fundamentally flawed. And quite frankly, I don't see, other than a name change, and from 15 years to 10 years, what is substantively changed. And quite frankly, low-income people, be they black, white, or polka dot, are not going to benefit from this one iota. Now, I'm just as familiar with anybody, as anybody, with unfairness in housing in this state. When I made my portion of the presentation about the library, I reflected back on the civil rights struggle and went back to the Rayfield bombing of that house in Collins Park, and how the architects of the civil rights struggle in Delaware joined together with the NAACP providing the leadership. But the fact of the matter is, the architects and those involved in the movement didn't do that by themselves. They joined with the people of goodwill in Collins Park. And they joined hands with the people of goodwill throughout this county that said that tragedy will never happen again. I sat in Judge Williams' office many times and listened to him talk about the fact that when he went to buy his house on Woodlawn Avenue, somebody else had to go for him who wasn't a person of color and make like he was him, and then he bought the house. As a child, we moved from Fifth and Scott to the other side of Lancaster Avenue, and we were the first African-American family in the 1600 block of Chestnut Street and had to endure the name calling and folks jumping up and moving. So I've lived through it. And every day, my family service workers are putting folks, trying to find emergency shelter, those kind of things, in housing. But as terrible as that was, we've made great progress. And if I look at the primary growth area, which is in Councilman Bell's district, Councilman Powers' district, Mr. Boyle, if you could help me out. And just this one slide, in my opinion, speaks volumes about the progress. May not be able to read it, so I'll read some of it to you. In the four high schools that serve the areas, Councilman Bell's district, Councilman Powers' district, Appaquinimus High School is 25% African American, 4% Hispanic, 99% low income. Middletown High School, 29% African American, 6.2% Hispanic, 11% low income. St. George's Tech, 25% African American, 7% Hispanic, 12% low income. The market and the housing and the absence of exclusionary practices have brought about diversity. So my question is, what are we fixing? Now, generally, when somebody comes forward with a proposal or a policy, the first thing that policy says is, here's the need. Here's what's wrong. This law, this ordinance is silent on what it is that's broken that we're trying to fix. Most proposals and policies end with specific goals and objectives. That's what we hope to accomplish. This goes on into perpetuity. And to make this kind of progress and be in a county where there's Section 8 housing and walking distance of Westover Hills, that our policies and practices are in fact working, and I don't see the need for this. Part of the presentation, the folks have hidden behind HUD, and to my knowledge, I raised a question in committee meeting whether any issues of non-compliance with HUD. The answer was no. To my knowledge, HUD has not requested the so-called workforce housing, inclusionary zoning, whatever it is you want to call it, nor have they compelled it. Then we're threatened with litigation consistent with Sussex County. And in my view, that's an insult to this council. There's nobody on this council who so much as stinks like two of those folks that I went down there and personally confronted about their dastardly ways, one of which is gone, one of which probably will go. And to make that comparison to this council, I think, is just a total insult and an outrage. And the fact of the matter is, I don't know where there's inclusionary zoning in Sussex County, and where there was litigation, where and how it was compelled by the court or anybody else to say that you must have inclusionary zoning. There was a change in the substitution that says, well, if you don't have it on site, you can have it elsewhere. Well, I represent half the city. If it doesn't include the city of Wilmington, then it doesn't include the entire county, and I'm concerned about it. We're in a situation now, Mr. Poole, go to the picture, where the city of Wilmington purposely and intentionally
under Mayor Baker said, we know what we're going to do. We're going to get rid of low-income housing. Four square blocks in Riverside, a whole section in Southbridge where low-income housing was, gone. Where did those folks come? They had to come to us. And we're going to spend time and money worrying about folks making $70,000 a year on $300,000 houses, and we got 14,000 vacant properties and folks sleeping on the street. Our priorities are wrong, and this whole thing, as far as I'm concerned, is misguided. Well, it's not costing anything. Yes, it is. You've got one, two departments tied up there, have been tied up in this for months. You expect another department to go about and implement it, and we got money and resources, this kind of staff time, critical staff people, but we can't do anything about folks sleeping on the street. To me, that's just flawed on the surface. And I'm going to give other folks a chance to chime in and get their positions known. I'm not finished. We talked about transparency. I'm not transparent about this process. Well, everybody's invited. I was never notified of a single meeting. More importantly, because I really got no dog in this fight, but to have two council people disenfranchised like this, not included in the process, and that be of no moment, how would anybody else like to have this kind of a situation imposed on you and your opposition be of no moment, and then you're just supposed to accept it and go along to get along? And we got all these folks and all these groups who supposedly support. Eliminated the planning board, but folks have said, and folks have said to me, well, 10 of our 12 desires were met, so we're not opposing it. That doesn't say that we adamantly support it and that it should be done. I don't know what we're fixing here. To me, it's flawed on the surface. It failed once. It's going to fail again. And I hope when you come back, since it's already been said that the votes are there, so I'm not going to waste everybody's time, because apparently somebody's already counted 7 votes. But when it fails again, I want the record to be clear that it should never again be a time where one individual has the capability to impose his or her will on not one, not two, but three departments, have that kind of undue influence and interference on the operation of a staff, and at the same time, our staff, that person has more power and influence than the county exec, and I think it's wrong in practice and shouldn't be allowed to happen again.
Thank you, Council Member. Council Member Powers, you have follow up.
If you go back to the school district, I appreciate those numbers, but half the Smyrna school district is in my council district. Kids went to that school. You look, it's 33% African American, 5.4% Hispanic, and 50% low income. And a lot of that is Southern Newcastle County. I split it before with Councilman Bell, now I have the whole thing. And Taylor's Bridge South. But the numbers show what it is.
Councilmember Bell?
Yes, Mr. President. I just had a couple of follow-up questions of either Mary Jacobson or of our manager, Eileen Fogarty. Okay. Question on sunsetting of plans, the current workforce housing plans. How long before a plan sunsets?
Under state law and county law, it's 5 years.
Okay. So am I to understand that the majority of the workforce housing plans, which we gave bonus densities to build affordable housing, if they don't build in 5 years, it sunsets?
I'm concerned with the word majority.
A number of...
There are four plants.
I'm not going to play the legal jargon
that,
here.
No, I'm sorry.
I'm
but
tell you is that
there are four plants,
right,
that are not yet... Actually, to be perfectly clear, I know of three plans that have not yet begun construction.
Okay.
Those plans may possibly sunset.
Okay. And what happens when they sunset? Can they build then because it's not a rezoning?
If a plan sunsets, they will be required to resubmit their plans to the department for re-review.
Okay, but it's not a rezoning, so they can come back and theoretically build what they were going to build without affordable housing.
The code requires that they would have to come back and comply with current provisions of the code.
And I thought the new ordinance was for rezonings only.
It is.
Then that your comment then that them coming back, if it's not a rezoning, doesn't fit 109.
There's 10 plans that have been recorded under current provisions. Mm-hmm. Six of those are under construction. Three are not under construction. One may not be.
Right.
With those plans, I can tell you that three of those might sunset. If they sunset, they lose any right they have. It's like the plan was never recorded. They go back to the way it was before the plan was recorded.
But they don't have to come back and follow Ordinance 109, correct?
If they request rezoning, they would have to come back under Ordinance, Substitute Number 2 to Ordinance 14-109, yes, they would.
Okay. And the other thing is on rezonings. This is only on rezonings?
Yes. This ordinance that's before you tonight applies to rezonings. There's also a voluntary applicability section where an as-of-right plan could request a 20% density bonus if 10% of the units are MPDUs.
Okay. What I don't get with this is if we're truly committed to provide affordable housing to all the citizens of New Castle County, then why are we only looking at rezonings? Why aren't we looking at the building industry itself as far as building homes here in New Castle County and try to bridge a partnership to create more affordable housing? I don't understand, because I'm trying to figure out in here how this deals with just rezonings only.
Well, I can tell you this. I think General Manager Fogarty discussed it earlier about density bonuses and when you can provide when a developer can provide affordable units and what density that developer needs. These calculations were based on a report that was prepared by two consultants. So as far as the need, what's the need, how come we didn't reference the need? We referenced the need because we incorporated that report into this legislation. So if you review the report that was prepared by the consultants, the need, the calculations, the density requirements are all provided in that. And General Manager Fogarty can go into more detail about that.
And are they just attached to rezonings? Like when we look at Montgomery County, Anne Arundel, because we keep saying that this is what the consultant said, this is what the consultant recommended, is it only rezonings? Because starting to get kind of a little concerned here that this only deals with rezonings.
Well, it deals with rezonings, it deals with variance applications requesting density bonuses, and it deals with any by-right plans that requests density bonus. So what it applies to, not rezonings, it applies to increases in density, is what it really applies to.
Councilmember Kilpatrick, and then we'll have public comment.
But that's not how it reads. It reads rezonings. It doesn't say to. It doesn't read to any density request.
Well, it does. The substitute number 2, we added a provision in there where it applies to requests for variances, variance requests requesting additional density.
Okay, because if you go back and you look throughout the country at the 7 or 8 areas that come up when you Google this, all of them have it on all new development. They don't punish somebody because they are asking for a rezoning. So in places like Montgomery County, on top of having it a percentage of 12.5% for all new developments, they also require that 40% of those be offered to nonprofits or to their Housing Opportunities Commission to be bought. And that way, somebody has control over them
basically, I guess, into perpetuity, that they would remain affordable housing and never go back on the market as a market value house.
That is correct. One of the distinctions, and I would not profess to have analyzed Montgomery County, I'm very familiar in general with moderately priced and workforce housing ordinances across the country. One of the distinctions for Newcastle County is a distinction that you identified, Councilwoman, and that is...
Please state your name again.
I apologize. I'm Philip Land Use General Manager. In Newcastle County, under the current code, we have only a few residential categories. So we have a huge increase in density when we go from one residential category to another through a rezoning. And again, the analysis that was done, we also had economists looking at this, was we wanted to make sure that whatever was brought forward was viable. We knew that it was viable because once you, in Newcastle County, go beyond a 70% increase in density, you then are at a point where you can provide moderately priced or workforce housing units. The direction is for moderately priced. So the distinction is that we have such a significant opportunity for increased density. That is why it was tied to rezonings. In many other jurisdictions, you do it across the board, but you do not have this kind of huge increase in density.
But in Newcastle County, when we have 50% open space and only two zoning categories, we aren't even giving anybody a choice of what type of house they would like to build. We're looking at Montgomery County, who is a bedroom community to Washington, D.C. That's not us. We don't have the difference in our market-priced houses and the workforce price or moderately priced dwelling units is not nearly as diverse here. Obviously, if we've got 1,400 houses under $275,000 that are on the market, we're not nearly as diverse as what they are in Montgomery County. And we're still, as Councilman Street said, we're still at $275,000. That doesn't address the people making $50,000.
This ordinance is not intended to address the people making $50,000. This is aimed at moderate income people. It's not for low. It's not for very low. But we changed the targets significantly from the last piece of legislation. We're not at 120. 120, I think, is market. Maybe 120 is higher than market. But there's an important distinction between competing with the market. I understand what you're saying is you read the paper, you see these houses for sale. As a government entity, we have an affirmative responsibility to further fair housing opportunities. We cannot rely on what the market is doing today. That obligation arises from the Delaware Constitution. It arises under state law. It arises under the Quality of Life Act. It arises under a comprehensive development plan. So we can sit here and we can agree this is how many houses are for sale in this price range last Sunday. But that doesn't relieve us from our governmental responsibility to affirmatively further fair housing in this county. We take a snapshot today. But we don't have to worry about just today. We have to worry about the future and when the market rises. We have to create opportunities. We have to create opportunities in different areas. We have to create choice. People shouldn't be forced to live in an area. They shouldn't have to live in Beverly Green because that's where they can afford to live. They should be able to go down. Maybe they want to go down and live in Councilman Powers' district. So it's about creating opportunities in different communities where people can afford to live that make a moderately priced income. So the intent of this ordinance isn't really to focus on the people making the $50,000. When the money is, when we produce money and that money is provided in the Housing Trust Fund, I think the intent of that fund is that we can use that money in order to support programs for low and very low income families. So the way it's working, it's a program that might address a broad range of incomes and a broad range of needs, but from the zoning and subdivision perspective, we're really aimed at moderate income people.
But I think that's part of the problem that I'm having, is that all of this is not spelled out. It's all, if we want to. But I don't see this in writing. I don't see a comprehensive program in writing. This is a Band-Aid program, and as Councilman Streak said, the first one didn't work, and there isn't that much in this one that is so different that I can accept that it's going to work.
Thank you, Councilwoman. As Mr. Streak prepares to speak, anyone from the public, would you come and sign up and prepare to speak as well? If you have a comment,
3 minutes,
please sign up at Councilman Smiley's desk, directly in front of you. You have 3 minutes to speak. Councilmember Street.
Yes, Mr. President. Two, I think, important points. One, this came forward initially before the impact of the recession had really taken its toll. And most of the so-called inclusionary zoning took place in a comparable period. This makes the assumption, the instant matter makes the assumption that the market is going to stay stable and there's no possibility that it's going to go back to where it was. My concern is you compel folks to be in a situation for 10 years, you're not allowed to draw all the equity out of your houses. So now what happens if they're underwater? We then put people in a situation where they're worse off than they would have been if they took the so-called advantage of the program. And the other is, as I raised a concern before, not last week, not last month, today, the homeless planning council sent out a letter saying that they're reconsidering and looking at the so-called central intake. Now, I've talked about the central intake before and the fact that because of the central intake policy and some other complications, folks right now that are enduring domestic violence and in need of emergency shelter, we're sending them to Dover. So when you send a lady, a mother, and her children to Dover from Newcastle County, kids have to make a transition in school, and all these things that impact the quality of life of low-income residents in Newcastle County, folks homeless, to put this kind of emphasis, this kind of money, on folks making more than $70,000 a year, trying to buy $300,000, to me is just fundamentally wrong, and it shouldn't go forward.
Thank you, Mr. Street. For those who are scheduled to speak, please come. First. And you have, please state your name for the record. You have 3 minutes, please. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. I'm really tall midget. Good evening, distinguished council persons and President Bullock.
Good evening.
I'd like to take this opportunity to first thank Newcastle County. My name is Gladys B. Spikes. I'm executive director of Housing Opportunities of Northern Delaware, and you have supported Housing Opportunities over the years, and I'd like to say on behalf of our clients, thank you for your support and your ongoing support. Which leads me to tell you a little bit about Housing Opportunities and how we were created. We were created by Newcastle County and the City of Wilmington to do just exactly what this ordinance is trying to do. We were created to be an advocacy group for furthering affirmatively fair housing, to give everyone equal access to housing, whether they wanted to rent, buy, or sell anywhere in the state of Delaware, actually, but specifically right now, today, in Newcastle County. I come here with somewhat of a troubled heart because I, too, as Honorable Street has stated, my parents had to go through the same things that he alluded to before. But with this ordinance that is coming before us, it gives us an opportunity for us to diversify Newcastle County. According to the Fair Housing Impediment Study that was passed, that was created a few years back, it indicated that in northern Newcastle County, that the income level there was more than, I would say, $200,000 plus. The problem with that is that you don't have a diversified community. I want to commend Newcastle County because all along you've been doing that. But you can't really have a concentrated area where there's just simply all low, moderate income families in order to make that neighborhood thrive and to make us move into the 21st or 22nd century. I'm truly concerned, and we're very supportive. The 200 clients that I do see, we also provide comprehensive housing counseling, and we do work with all of your constituents. We work with more than 250 families on an annual basis, trying to help them to save their homes through mortgage foreclosure prevention and through the various aspects of the different types of programs. We also have a stellar first-time home buyer program, and we'd like to thank Newcastle County again for providing that down payment sell assistance. But there are more than, there are more than 80, I know, I'm going to stop, but I just want to say that more than 25% of the families that come into my house, into our office, are above the required HUD requirements for low moderate income families.
Thank you.
And with this, it would be, we truly support that, and we feel that we should consider that.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Thank you. Next, please state your name and organization you represent for the record, please.
My name is Peggy Schultz. I'm representing the League of Women Voters of Newcastle County. The League welcomes this opportunity to speak relative to the proposed moderately priced dwelling unit ordinance. The League supports measures to assure equal housing opportunities and decent affordable housing in Newcastle County. We applaud efforts to rework the earlier workforce housing ordinance, which though well-intentioned was ultimately stymied by its use by some developers as a bargaining chip to get approval of their proposed rezonings. Proposed provision for off-site units or fee-in-lieu of agreements appear to be improvements to the old law, since moderately priced dwelling units in the development with costly maintenance fees are an anachronism and helpful to no one. We question the wisdom, however, of allowing off-site units in instances where, quote, the site cannot accommodate all dwelling units, end quote. A proposed site, by definition, can accommodate all dwelling units planned for that site. The League appreciates the several opportunities for public input on the proposed ordinance provided by the administration, while deploring the extent to which the public took advantage of these opportunities. Yet another improvement over the old ordinance is the reduced AMI for MPDU buyers compared with the earlier workforce housing legislation. With a lower income requirement, more people can be served. A requirement of the proposed legislation, which the League particularly favors, is the 15-year affordability period. Research presented by the consultant says that MPDU legislation without this 15-year period simply does not work. Opponents of this provision argue that the homebuyer is not allowed to make a reasonable profit when selling his or her home within the 15-year period, yet reasonable profit often is defined as an expectation of a windfall profit. The purpose of the ordinance is to offer the opportunity of home ownership to people who earn what we might call middle-class income, not to provide an opportunity to make a large profit. Even selling early, however, the homeowners are able to ask for costs associated with home improvements which they've made, and they get the price increase reflected by the consumer price index. The League of Women Voters urges Council to support this ordinance in order to help assure Newcastle County residents that they will have a full range of equal housing opportunities.
Thank you. Next. Please state your name and organization for the record, sir. And you have 3 minutes.
Thank you. Good evening. My name is Howard Fortunato. I represent the Home Builders Association of Delaware. Okay, 3 minutes. We congratulate and support the efforts. I might talk fast. We congratulate and support the efforts and the work of Councilman Hollins to create a long-term affordable housing program. We also appreciate the opportunity to work with the County Land Use Department and many other civic groups to craft the substitute ordinance. In the end, it's our association's members who invest their careers, their private capital, in creating these future affordable homes. Therefore, it is very important to us that the ordinance is a successful tool in order to encourage housing and home ownership. I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. Our association is taking a neutral position on the proposed ordinance as drafted in substitute number 2, but we support the overall effort. We know the ordinance has come a long way since its initial introduction in October, thanks to the efforts of many. Although many of our changes that we suggested were included in the substitute, we do ask the council to consider several others. Number one, we do believe that MPDs in all rezonings should be voluntary and not mandated. Not only are rezonings typically controversial, but MPDUs are also controversial, and that will make the rezoning application that much more difficult to achieve. The recent submissions of well-planned, diverse communities are evidence that developers and engineers are designing communities for the future. Our fear is that a mandate will discourage private investments and rezonings as a whole. Number two, the density bonus for inclusion in voluntary subdivision plans should be increased to encourage private investment and maximize the amount of future affordable homes to be built. We believe our previously suggested 40% instead of the drafted 20% is appropriate and would help to increase the success of the ordinance. Now, the third item, we believe that the sale of new homes should be eligible. We believe the sale of new homes should be eligible to convert to rental after 180 days on the market instead of 365 days as it is now. As you know, the ordinance has been amended to allow owners of existing units the option to sell their home after 180 days. Builders should be afforded the same option with rentals. We run the risk of private investment not building any units until they absolutely have to. Very few builders can afford to spec a home and leave it vacant for even 180 days. The national builders don't even build specs. We believe that the sales price should be set as it is in DSHA's first-time buyer programs and not capped. That would make it consistent. That would make this program consistent with what DSH.
Thank you, sir.
Okay.
That's it.
Question.
Mr. Weiner?
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Fortunato. Councilman Bob Weiner. Mm-hmm. I hope regardless what happens this evening that you will pursue some of the recommendations of HBADE. Particularly interested in the density bonuses, having sponsored the density bonus for 55 and older, and also initially spearheaded the Claremont Renaissance project with 16 DUs per acre, mixed use by right. And I believe that with creative architectural excellence and quality of construction material and design, density is our friend.
I would agree.
Thank you.
Certainly. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Fortunato. Next, please state your name and organization representing for the record, please.
Council President Bullock, members of council, my name is Ramona Feldman. While I work in the city for eliminating discrimination in multiple capacities, I'm here as a citizen of the county and of the city of Wilmington in particular. As a resident of Newcastle County, I am standing before you to urge your support of this legislation. Each council member present this evening has an opportunity to demonstrate leadership and commitment to two important public policy initiatives, building location-efficient communities that are healthy, affordable, and diverse, and reducing barriers that contribute to segregated communities. I am confident that all of you are aware that as an entitlement jurisdiction that receives federal funds from HUD, the county has an obligation to affirmatively further fair housing. In my view, this ordinance demonstrates an understanding of that obligation and makes an effort to comply. Finally, I just want to say that we are at a pivotal time in our nation, in our state, in our county, and in our history, a time when each of us can do something, big or small, but something to make our communities, our country, our state, a better place to live, grow, and prosper. I hope that you will see passage of this ordinance as an effort in that direction. I am reminded when I was preparing, as I will run back to my office, comments for this time, that of a quote, two quotes actually, one by Helen Keller. It says, "I am one, I am only one, but still I am one. I cannot do everything, but still I can do something. I cannot do everything, and I will not refuse to do the something that I can do." The final quote is by environmentalist Terry Tempest Williams. And she says, "The eyes of the future are looking back at us, and they are praying for us to see beyond our times." Again, I encourage and urge you to pass this ordinance. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Fulmer. Next, please state your name for the record and organization you represent or yourself. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Mr. President. My name is Kevin Kelly. I am president of Leon Wiener & Associates, a Wilmington-based development firm. We are the largest developer and owner of affordable housing here in the state of Delaware, and we are currently developing affordable housing not only here in Delaware, but in Virginia, Maryland, Pennsylvania, Ohio, and Connecticut. I am here not to speak in favor or opposition to the ordinance, but to applaud this revision to the ordinance and applaud Councilman Holland's efforts in this regard. I will tell you that based on my experience developing affordable housing, and our company has done, aside from the market rate housing, and our firm was the lead firm on developing Pike Creek Valley back many, many years ago, Pike Creek Valley Ventures, and throughout Brandywine 100. But our experience in developing affordable housing, Newcastle County is one of the most difficult, if not the most difficult place that we find to work. And I could go into a whole series of reasons for that, but I won't. Again, this, I think the ordinance, the amendment here, is a great step forward. I do oppose the mandatory provisions in it with regard to the rezoning. There are other, I believe, technical tweaks that will be critically important to practitioners and developers to ensure that this might be used and used more effectively than the previous ordinance. Quite frankly, the previous ordinance was as much a victim of the marketplace and the historic downturn in the housing industry, which was a depression, not a recession for housing, than it was, I believe, anything else. Some of those issues are, I'm concerned about the mechanisms for setting the maximum sales price. It is not clear and ambiguous here. A developer builder has to know once he begins a project that a price for a unit can and will be fixed, that it's not articulated in the ordinance. I am opposed to the mechanism for capping the resale price. That is set as being adjusted by CPI. Again, great deal of vagary, and again, the devil is always in the details. Traditionally, existing home prices have ranged at approximately 1% above CPI. So the advantages you are attempting to provide, on one hand, to moderate income families, you would strip away by utilizing that calculus in this measure. The housing trust.
Thank you, sir.
Okay. Thank you, sir.
Next, please state your name for the record and group you're representing where you sit, sir.
Hello, Council. I'm Vincent White, and for full disclosure purposes, I am the past president of the Dollar Association of Realtors. I'm the past president of the Newcastle County Association of Realtors. I'm currently a Wilmington Housing Authority Commissioner, appointed by the governor, and I also serve on the Delaware Council of Housing, which has oversight for housing trust fund dollars and federal tax credit issues in the state. I'm here to support and ask for your support of the ordinance. I've listened to some of your comments, and quite frankly, what I hear is what I've heard throughout this state and throughout this country, an attitude of not in my backyard, that somehow the needs of the moderately priced homes, or for some, the affordable home issue, is one that should be pushed to the side. The comments that I hear, I've not heard before when we talk about developments. The comments of transportation, of access, are not the comments I've heard when we were developing Hokesson, Pike Creek Valley, or Route 40. I think the council is in a unique position, and I commend the sponsor, and I commend the co-sponsors for having the courage, the insight, to understand that this is not about any one group. It is about all of us. I've sold real estate for 30 years. I've walked in the shoes of buyers who could not afford the opportunity of choice. And it's not a good feeling. But one of the things that we can do tonight is understand that this county is for everyone. The availability of choice is important for diverse neighborhoods, because that is the type of neighborhood that grows, that prospers. We need to understand that we are not gatekeepers, but stewards, and act in a manner of that nature. Thank you for allowing me to comment.
Thank you. Mr. Smiley, you have a comment or question?
Mr. White, I've known you for a while, although not closely, but and I have a lot of respect for you, and I continue to have that.
Thank you.
However, I will take this moment, and I haven't spoken it all night. I take exception to the broad brush of not in my backyard. I'm not a wealthy man by any means, but I do have the capability, my wife and I, to move if we'd like. However, that being said, we live between Route 9 and Route 13 in a place called Swanwick Estates, and I would place the diversity of my community against anyone in this chamber. Black, white, Indian, Hispanic, Oriental, we have every nationality coming together in my community. So not in my backyard, it's in my front yard. It's up my street, it's down my street, I welcome it, I pleasure with it, and so I take exception not in my backyard, because we're discussing my backyard, my front yard, and quite honestly, my community, the homes sell for less than what we're looking to put on the market here this evening. So, again, I respect you, but I take exception to that broad comment, sir.
And I appreciate your comments.
And I remain undecided still at this point, just for the record. So.
I appreciate those comments, and if I may say this to those comments, one of the insidiousness about housing choices and access is because it does look like everyone's in the pool. In reality, that may not be the case. And that's all I would comment on that. Again, thank you, Kevin.
Mr. President.
Thank you, Mr.
Thank you, Mr. White. Specifically, Mr. White.
Mr. White.
You know I have the utmost respect for you. We kind of grew up together, went to school together.
Yes, Kevin.
Love the work that you've done.
But, you know, I'm glad that hopefully in the instant matter we can agree to disagree. But I had occasion following girls' basketball team. And I walked into Appaquinimic High School. Probably it is the most beautiful school I've been in. I understand Cape Town State is comparable, but I haven't been in there. Looked like you would eat off the floor. And when I walked in the gym, given the players, the fans, it might as well have been Howard versus Wilmington High in the 60s. So, in my opinion, the exclusionary practices that we all have been concerned about in the high growth area of this county, it's not a reality. The market's taking care of that itself, and you can look at some of those brand new developments, some of those brand new homes, and they're as diverse as anywhere in the nation. And if you look at that and make comparisons to other jurisdictions where there has been success, it's been mandated, but none of that's been mandated, and still good diversity has been accomplished. So I just wanted you to understand from my perspective why I'm taking the position that I'm taking, and, you know, the intended beneficiaries, in my view, are the ones that stand to be disenfranchised when it comes to being fair with being able to gather equity out of the home that you're paying your monthly mortgage for. So that's a problem for me.
Councilman Street, I appreciate your comments, and you know we go back a long way, and I appreciate your position, and I would just offer this. 30 years of selling real estate, and I'm not doing residential right now for full disclosure, I'm doing commercial. I've witnessed this county's growth and maturity in housing and housing selection. And I do understand that many of our communities appear to have a sense of diversity to them. And one of the speakers before me said, it is not about now as much as it is about moving into the future and having an eye on that also. And I would offer this. Trillions of dollars were lost in the last housing slump. Many people who you represent lost their homes. Many people lost the equity position in their homes. They will make an attempt to enter back into housing. And let's make certain that playing field that they enter into has as many choices as possible.
And I will respectfully represent to you, and I've screamed it repeatedly, that the highest foreclosure rate in the county, both in the county and in the city, come out of my councilmatic district. And those folks who have been foreclosed on do not stand to benefit one iota. They're automatically excluded when you talk about the $70,000 target threshold.
Thank you, Mr. Wright.
Thank you. Thank you, Councilman.
Yeah. Councilmember Powers, you have a comment or question?
This is not an issue. It can be a problem.
Thank you, Councilman. Next speaker, please. Please state your name. And
good evening, President Bullock and members of the council. My name is Trish Callaher. I'm with the Delaware Housing Coalition. We're a statewide advocacy organization. We advocate for affordable housing. We represent, through our nonprofit housing agenda, a diverse group of developers, nonprofit developers, including all three Delaware Habitats that are homes of Seaford, Clarify of Delaware, Delaware Federation of Housing Counselors, Delaware NARO, NCOL, the Homeless Planning Council, the ARC of Delaware, and DCRC. We support this ordinance. We support Councilman Hollins's valiant efforts to have it passed. We believe that
diverse, affordable housing throughout our county is something that will benefit all of us. And for those who feel that there is not enough information that's already been shared, I would ask you to go to our website, Housing for All, look at our study that we release each year. This year, Who Can Afford to Live in Delaware gives some startling statistics about the reality of housing in Delaware. DSHA's recent housing needs assessment provides some very good statistics, and specifically about New Castle County, and also the study that was done about to support the ordinance. And I would just say that in the housing needs assessment, 37,000 New Castle County residents were identified as being severely cost burdened, paying more than 50% of their income per month on housing. And a lot of people are forced to purchase housing that is way too expensive for them, and that is one of the reasons we had a foreclosure crisis several years ago, and we don't want to have anything like that happening again. And transportation follows housing. You don't get bus lines and then get houses. You get the houses and then you get the transportation. But you have to be careful, as was mentioned, if you're not asking developments in Greenville the same questions about transportation as you are for other kinds of developments. So that's all. We do support the mandatory provisions as well.
Thank you so much. And I want to thank all of the public speakers, the presenters, and the very healthy debate. Call on the sponsor now if you're ready for the vote. Mr. Hollins.
Thank you, Mr. President. Just with a few comments, I certainly want to appreciate all the people that have come out to support this legislation. It has been a long journey. They have stuck with us through all of the hearings. They have also met with us privately in their various agencies, especially Kevin Kelly, who is the president of the National Association of Home Builders. I consider him a friend, and we do consult with each other. And I've noted his concerns, and we will certainly take a look at those, as well as Vincent White. And I single those two out because of the work that they have done over the years. I can recall going to Washington for the Congressional Black Caucus and going into a forum on housing, and very pleased to see that my neighbor, my friend from Newcastle County, was on a national panel in Washington, D.C. during the Congressional Black Caucus discussing the issue of affordability. We have heard tonight that there is no need, but the only agency that has conducted a needs assessment in the Delaware State is the Delaware State Housing Association. I know some folks say they have not seen it. I have a copy of it here. It has been circulated very well. The analysis of impediments to fair housing choice in Delaware contains specific recommendations for Newcastle County to address in eliminating identified barriers to fair housing. For my entire political career, I have been in the struggle for fair housing, and today the struggle is just as challenging as it was when I first came to County Council more than 24 years ago. But it is still a struggle worthy of fighting for. Last year, Vice President Joe Biden came home to receive an award during the Barrister's Ball. The Vice President reminisced about serving on Newcastle County Council and his struggle fighting for scattered site housing. And it sounds as though those opposed to moderate place dwelling units today are making the same argument as they made when the Vice President was a County Council member. I would say, Mr. President, that my work for fair housing didn't start with this particular piece of legislation. When I came to Newcastle County, there was no housing committee. I created the housing committee for Newcastle County Council. I have served on the board of Habitat for Humanity for 2.5 terms. I helped to create the Section 8 to Home Ownership Program for Section 8 clients here in Newcastle County. I have solicited a loan, $150,000 from the private sector to help low-income residents, moderate-income residents to provide for down payment settlement help, and that money is still being utilized today. As a matter of fact, at our last meeting, there was $30,000 of that money going back into the fund for down payment and settlement help. So my work has been more than what I'm talking about. It's what I have been doing. I have been recognized for that work from the governor, from the NAACP, from Housing Opportunities of Northern Delaware, from the Delaware Housing Coalition. And I offer those comments just to say that I have been consistently working historically for affordability. It's nothing new to me. But I'm also pleased to recognize that tonight, hearing the comments from my colleagues, that I can look forward to other council members coming forward with affordable legislation that then I can support. So I hope that the council members who support this legislation tonight will support it in all earnest, as I'm very earnest about bringing it forward. And those who are not going to support it, who have better ideas than I do, I look forward to working with them. Thank you, Mr. President.
Thank you, Mr. Hollins. Mr. Retta and Mr. Cartier.
Thank you, Mr. President. I've been sitting here all night listening to different people, and I also had a meeting with the sponsor, the lead sponsor on this. And I believe one of the things I've asked him, and I believe his comment was that if some changes, if this passes or goes forward, if some changes have to be made, it'll be made. And I believe Councilman Weiner asked also on the same thing about any changes or to be tweaked to a couple different speakers are up. And tonight, one was Kevin Kelly, and the other was Mr. Fortunato. And some of the things that were said, I agree with the speakers. And some of the things that Councilman Hollins and I talked about today, I agree with. But one of the things was said, one of the speakers got up and said something about resale. And I believe she was from the city of Wilmington. Well, I live in a resale house. I'm the third owner of that house. And that's my first house, because that's all I can afford at the time. And you change things in the house that we had to change or we wanted to change. And I believe there's a council person on here now who spoke tonight, which was Janet Kirkpatrick. She's talked about her daughter. They bought a house and they made changes in it. You know, we don't have to have that shiny new car and shiny new shoes all the time. Sometimes you just got to do without, and you have to do what you can afford. You can afford. I'm not against the housing. I've always been for somebody to buy a house, always been for people to get jobs so they can buy a house. And I don't care where they live. Doesn't bother me, because the community I live in is really diverse, along with Councilman Smiley. The houses in my community where I live, they range from about $65,000 to about $2.25 million. And that's topped out. The community service picked some areas to say that we're depressed or need to be in need to have. It jumped right over Ellesmere, but a few years ago, it wasn't. The houses are still the same houses, still the same price, and they sell, because these are what people can afford. Some of them are first-time home buyers, some of them are their second home. And they come in here and they live and stay. The community hasn't changed that much that I live in my section. So, you know, we're talking about affordability, inclusionary, and mandating the developers. And I just think by mandating, what's going to happen, you're not going to get much done. They might own the land, but they might not file. And if they do file, they might let a sunset because they might not build. So I think by tweaking this now, even though I believe our counselor said that we can't because of it's already passed, I believe in January it ends, we can't redo it, the affordable housing, why can't we? Why can't we just say we'll extend it for 6 months, get some of the tweaks that we need now, take care of them now, and then go forward? I believe Councilman Powers and Councilman Bell were right when they said that they weren't included in the negotiations. Most of the work is going to be done in their area. Not much in my area. There might be a few spots, but not much. Most they can build is maybe 20 homes. That's the tops. and so many other areas too. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Letta. Finally, Councilman McCarty.
Yes, I would just like to make some basic clarifications with this moderately priced housing piece of legislation. I've been here for 10 years. We began the expanded council in the midst of the housing boom. Primarily, the growth zone of New Castle County is Southern New Castle County, and it is primarily zoned S. I would argue that S zoning, which is extremely low density, is by its very nature intentionally exclusionary. If you were to look at the development patterns in New Castle County prior to adoption of the Unified Development Code, you would see tremendous variety of housing and price points. So we were confronted with this sort of reality, and the idea that people in the surrounding states cashing out the equity on their homes, coming to New Castle County, having a party at our expense, not paying transfer tax because they're considered first-time home buyers. So we're developing all of these very expensive neighborhoods that bore no price point relationship to the median price of working people in this county. That's why the number of 70,000 or so is important, because that's where most people are. If you draw a bell curve of income in the county, the most price points or the most points in that earning curve are at that $70,000-$75,000 level. So that's why it's important to address moderately priced housing, because S zoning is exclusionary. The other point that I'd like to make is that this program will benefit low moderate income folks, because we have, if the developer comes forward and for some reason doesn't want to comply with the requirements for mandated moderately priced units under a rezoning, they have to make a contribution to the housing trust fund. The housing trust fund dollars can be used to benefit low mod home buyers, renters, whatever council and the Department of Community Services and Land Use defines their use as such. So the program can benefit both the median income earners of this county, the working people of this county, and the low moderate income people. The other point I'd like to make, this gives council a tremendous amount of say, because a rezoning is a discretionary vote. It is not a by right. However, if the rezoning is adopted, then the mandate applies. We saw already developers using the bait and switch tactic, where they would say to a community, well, I could build workforce housing, or I'll go for an ST rezoning without any requirement. And we saw that kind of tactic employed a couple of times. So for all these reasons, I'm going to support this. I don't think this is going to spell disaster for Southern New Castle County. I think it's going to be a constructive measure. And again, like any piece of legislation, you know, it depends on the market environment we're in. It depends on, the interest rate environment. It's not a panacea for the housing problem in New Castle County, but it does propose constructive things, and I believe that it's worthy of council's support tonight.
Thank you, Councilman Cartier, and all of you who participated in the debate and the discussion again tonight. Seeing that there are no more questions or comments or public comment, Madam Clerk, please call the roll of Ordinance 14-109.
Mr. Bell.
No.
Mr. Bullock.
Yes.
Mr. Cartier.
Yes.
Ms. Dillard.
Yes.
Mr. Hollins.
Yes.
Ms. Kilpatrick.
No.
Mr. Powell.
No.
Mr. Retta.
Yes.
Mr. Sheldon.
Yes.
Mr. Smiley.
Yes.
Mr. Street. Mr. Tackett.
Yes.
Mr. Weiner.
Yes.
President, the roll call reveals 9 yes, 4 no.
Ordinance 14-109 is approved. Ordinance 14-246, Mr. Cartier.
Yes, Mr. President, like resolution number 14-246, read by title only and placed before council for its consideration.
Okay. Resolution 14-256, honoring the life of Malakajuna Mally Rao and expressing condolences to his family and friends.
Mr. Cartier.
I know it's a late hour. I'll be as brief as I can. I don't think I can do this man justice. Tim, do we have the image of this person? Okay. Tonight before council, we have a resolution honoring the life of Dr., as we know, all knew him, Mally Rao, and expressing his condolences to his family and friends. Dr. Rao is part of that group of brilliant scientists that were assembled in the heyday of the DuPont Company. He was a man without pretension, and he was a mentor to many young scientists at DuPont. He was one of the brightest minds in that company. He created new molecules and was granted 200 U.S. patents in his career. And when I say that he was unassuming, he was a man that lived in Claymont with his wife Vera Lee for 30 or 40 years and was loved by his neighbors, had many friends, and he was an extremely highly honored person. He was a DuPont Fellow, a distinguished scientist who won the Lavoisier Medal for from DuPont. Lavoisier is the father of modern chemistry. He also won the Stephanie Quillip Award from DuPont. He was one of the most awarded and creative scientists in the history of DuPont chemistry, and he passed away very suddenly and unexpectedly. I was at his viewing at the Chandler Funeral Home, and for 3 hours the parking lot never stopped filling up with friends, admirers, fellow scientists to come pay their final tribute and respects to this man. In his private life, Dr. Rao and his wife were giant supporters of the Tri-State Bird Rescue. He was able to use his connections with DuPont to get large grants to the Tri-State Bird Rescue for that organization. And he was also a highly skilled horticulturalist who grew orchids and was part of an international organization of people who grew these very exotic flowering plants. He was a board member of the Delaware Orchid Society. So it's with this deep sadness, but admiring the creativity and the love and the extraordinary genius of Dr. Rao that I bring this resolution forward to in his memory tonight.
Thank you, Councilman. Council, you have any comments or questions?
Mr. President?
Yes.
I would like to thank Councilman Cartier for bringing this resolution forward. I personally knew Mally Rao, we call him Mally, at the DuPont Experimental Station. We worked in the same building, on the same floor. I was shocked when I recognized that he had passed. He was a great person. He was a great scientist, but he was also a great person. He was an esteemed researcher, having more patents than I can even remember, but he was well respected in his work at DuPont. He was a pioneer, and I was shocked to see him leave, but I think all of the things that Councilman Cartier has said about him are very true. As I said, he was someone that I saw almost daily in Building 262 on the second floor at the DuPont Experimental Station, and he will be missed.
Thank you. Any other comments, questions, any public comment? Seeing none, Madam Clerk, please call.
Mr. Bell?
Yes.
Mr. Bullock?
Yes.
Mr. Cartier?
Yes.
Ms. Diller?
Yes.
Mr. Holland?
Yes.
Ms. Kilpatrick?
Yes.
Mr. Powers?
Yes.
Mr. Retta?
Yes.
Mr. Shelton?
Yes.
Mr. Smiley?
Yes.
Mr. Street?
Yes.
Mr. Tackett?
Yes.
Mr. Weiner?
Yes.
President of the Roll Call Reveals 13. Yes.
Order 14-246 is approved. Do we have anything on the agenda item K? Public comment?
Yes, sir.
Did you sign up, sir?
Yes,
ma'am. He's good. Please come, sir.
Appreciate it.
Please state your name. You have 3 minutes.
Minister Leonard Potts,
these Love in Action Ministries / Ceasefire House of God for All People. Mr. President, I want to thank you, and I want to thank the whole council for supporting us in our basketball tournament, Shoot the Ball and Not Me, which we went around the city. We've done 6 events in 2013 going into 2014, and I just want to read an article, just part of it, from the Lancaster newspaper. And it's a friend of mine that comes down from Lancaster to help us, and he's been very faithful. And his name is Reverend Ronald Cole. And it says, the Reverend Leonard Potts, myself, drove from Wilmington, Delaware to attend the celebration. It's 27 years he's done service, but in those 27 years he's come down and helped me personally with what we do. And they were returning a favor from Reverend Cole has done many times for them. He's never turned us down whenever we've called, Potts said. Cole has gone to Wilmington to help with the citywide basketball tournaments with skits and plays and dinners that we do out of the help of each and every one of y'all. I have these two gifts. I had three, but I don't know what happened to the third one. I just don't know, but it's going to happen. Mr. President, I was going to give this to you,
but I changed my mind.
Oh, boy.
I'm going to give it to your assistant, Mr. Anthony, because he always was there. When I couldn't get a hold of you, even though you already told us you was going to support us, Mr. Anthony called me and he said, we're working on it. He called me and said, it's approved. Come on down. And you know, I just want to run over right quick and hand you a name, because I appreciate him.
Thank you.
And I love you.
I'll bring you a copy of the classifieds tomorrow, Anthony. Don't forget the gift log.
Now, with my last thing,
yes.
Mr. President, we've just done October the 4th over in South Wilmington. We had 13 young ladies in our pageant across the stage, right there on the Townsend Place in the park. You know, and we only had
30 seconds, my brother.
We only had 12 trophies. Okay, but this one right here is for Mr. Hollis.
Hollins.
He supported us. He talked with me for about 25 minutes out in the lobby, and I just want to thank you so
much. Thank you, sir. Thank you.
Yes, sir. I appreciate. Can I give it to him?
Yes.
But we still.
You ain't getting 25 minutes here. Give me a gift. Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Thank you for your efforts.
Thank you.
No, I've been demoted, so I'm scared.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Not just 28.
Thank you for your spirit and for the hard work you do.
More gift log.
Thank you. And we'll be looking at the gift log. So maybe return that to you. We thank you for your efforts. Mr. Smiley.
Motion to adjourn.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Ladies and gentlemen,
pop that bottle, Penrose.
Happy holidays to everybody, to you and your family.